This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Welcome to the latest Brit Rest Roundtable. I'm Arnold Furious. With me is Oliver Court.
Hello.
Not with us is Rob, who's still on sabbatical. This week we were talking about these shows that we went to, well, I'm going to say last weekend, but it depends when it drops, but weekend recently, when we went to see Fight Club Pro's yearly Infinity Tournament, and we also went to see Progress, the Graps of Wrath, and in the Electric Ballroom. We're going to go straight into Fight Club Pro because we've been meaning to talk about them for
about half a year. A lot of requests by our co-hosts and listeners. And not only are we finally going to talk about it, I finally got to go to the Fiction Warehouse and see it in all its grimy, seedy glory.
Oh, it's horrible, isn't it? But like in a good way.
It's a perfect place for the promotion.
So when we're queuing up outside, it's like an underpass, isn't it? That's basically
An underpass and through a fire escape door.
Pure grime.
Up two flights of stairs, graffitied.
It was that light that was really doing it for me. The light at the top of a pillar, and it was just covered in like dirt. The filthiest looking lights I've ever seen. I tried to take a photo of it to kind of demonstrate how grimy this area of Wolverhampton is, but it didn't do it justice.
But it was hell of a place.
Cool. Yeah, I really like the Fiction as a venue. It's so small, and the roof is low, but it's not so low that people are hitting their feet on it when they're doing dives.
Mm-hmm.
But it's low enough that it
feels
intimate. All the energy
it feels like a fight club.
Yeah, well, that's the whole point.
Yeah.
Also, I can get a double Jack Daniels and a Coke in there for £4. Ice is free. compare that to the Electric Ballroom. A double Jack and Coke in the Electric Ballroom is £8.
So Fight Club Pro is much better value.
Yes, it is. On the drinks front, there's absolutely no doubt about that. But how do we think it's stacked up on the entertainment front? Oof, we shall endeavor to try and make a decision one way or the other by the end of the show. This one started off with a trainees match, and we're still trying to figure out the one guy's name. There was Johnny T. He was the heel.
From Tipton.
So he's Johnny Tipton. And the other guy, his name's Alan or possibly Adam Kane or Cade or maybe even Cage. It kind of sounded different every time like he was announced. So I'm still not sure what his name is.
He was from Sedgley, though.
Sedgley. The crowd was chanting Sedgley at him.
It was Tipton versus Sedgley. That's the most important thing to remember. And it was a pretty good trainee match.
Yeah, their trainees are showing some real promise, the guys. I mean, Omari was on this show, and I mean, he's raw, but he's real good already. It's always really nice to see that. We keep losing people from British wrestling. They keep being poached by places with more money, like NXT or New Japan or wherever. And to see this kind of conveyor belt of talent where there's still guys coming through, like every show I go to, there seems to be somebody new on that show who I've never seen before, and they're good already. So that's great for the scene.
the show had a fair few guys who don't have much exposure yet, but it looked, there was no one on this show who looked bad by any means.
Yeah, so the training match first, I think Johnny Tipton won.
Tipton picked up the victory for Tipton. I believe Tipton. Tipton's only victory tonight.
Yes, I think it was. Unless Travis well Banks is but... secretly from Tipton.
Tipton, Australia, or Tipton, New Zealand.
Yeah, so with that out of the way, the show got underway officially with the two Infinity Tournament semi-finals. If you've never seen Fight Club Pro's Infinity before, it's basically it's 2 4-way elimination matches, and then the winner of those two matches goes on to the final at the end of the night. So the first match was pretty good. This was Joe Coffey, Mikey Whiplash, Trent Seven, and Amari. And that was a pretty solid start to the show.
Yeah, for all we've ragged on Mikey Whiplash, he was really good here. Progresses his Achilles heel.
Yeah, I don't have any problem with Mikey Whiplash in Fight Club Pro. I think every time he's there, he looks like a really solid hand.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's just they kind of have less constraints on him, possibly. So it's like he can do... But then Progress don't really rein their wrestlers in that much. So I don't know. I don't know what it is, but like he's for me, I don't think he's had a good match in Progress, but every time I've seen him in Fight Club Pro, he's been fine.
And also Amari, it's the first time I've seen him for about a year, I believe, and he's already improved. Like he's a tall lad. He's gonna fill out. He's a young lion right now, but in a couple of years' time, he has like the tangibles. He may not have the intangibles, but he certainly has the tangibles to be a star.
It's going to be interesting to watch him develop because, like you say, he's already gotten a lot better as a trainee. This is really the start of his career. And like you say, he's a big guy. He clearly takes care of himself. The one concern that I have for him is that his ring gear is basically a pair of shorts, which isn't terribly impressive. No. But I think if he got himself some really, like, cool looking ring gear, he'd already be getting bookings because he's pretty good. They put him out first here. They kind of gave him a nice little showing and then put him out.
Yeah.
So it was nice for him to get that opportunity to rub shoulders with the other guys, and I don't think he looked out of place.
And then Trent Seven was Trent Seven. Just an absolute wonder this year.
Trent's so good. I think the best thing about seeing Trent live is that you can hear everything that he says, whereas like on if you're watching him on video, you can't always hear what he's saying because of commentary or the microphones don't pick it up.
Yeah.
But like you're right next to him and like he's constantly bantering, whether it's with the fans or like with his opponents or his tag team partner. It's that level of banter is there like throughout every match he has,
and that makes him so likable as well.
Oh yeah, and like he was on the apron on this one and somebody yelled you're just a shit Rocky Horror at Mikey Whiplash, and the look on Trent's face as he just turned around and did the like, you know, the John Cena gif for with the
yeah
you know the one I'm talking about. It was like that. And I was in bits.
I suppose that's something that he's learned by spending so much time in an environment like Fight Club Pro, where the crowd are so close to the ring and like it's so such an intimate venue that he's picked up that style, I guess, of being able to work a match but get the crowd involved by essentially involving them with him and the way he interacts with them.
Well, he's really good at that in every sense of the word, because like he comes out at the start of the show and he kind of makes the crowd feel at ease that they're all together because they're all like
he does the Jim Smallman gimmick.
Yeah, but it's not on tape or anything. He just comes out to get a feel for the room, and it's usually a good feel. And then like he, you know, before he comes out for his match, he's shaking hands with everyone. It's he has a connection to the audience that you don't get that very often. there's not a lot of wrestlers in this country that have that and that have earned it.
Definitely.
So Trent won this match to progress to the final. I was very happy about that because I got to see more Trent.
He beat Whiplash after Whiplash beat him at the previous show, getting the measure of revenge.
So Whiplash put Joe Coffey out as well, which I just kind of felt really weird because, like, Joe Coffey the week before had been main event in the Hydro in front of 6,000 people, and then he's in front of 200 jobbing to Mikey Whiplash, who couldn't get on the ICW.
Whiplash here, I think, got over that sort of pest heel character a lot better than he has done in Progress, because, like, everyone groaned when he eliminated Coffey, but then they got behind Seven. He had an actual foil for people to get behind, whereas in Progress he just sort of flitted from one opponent to the next and never really felt like a worthy opponent for Tommy End or anyone, really. But here he felt like a danger, but also someone that everyone wanted to see get dropped on his head, and that is indeed what happened.
Yeah, well, the great thing about this company is if you like the style of wrestling that they do, you get a whole show of it. That they occasionally throw in like a comedy match, but more often than not, you're going to see people just beating the shit out of each other. And for me, that's my favorite kind of wrestling, and that's what you get with Fight Club Pro. It's start of the night to the end of the night. You're just going to see that style. I thought the first match was good. The second match was better. Second match had Chris Brooks, Tyler Bates, Travis Banks, and a surprise eighth participant, which was Jimmy Havoc. Jimmy Havoc didn't get an awful lot of a reaction because he came out after Travis Banks.
Travis Banks got a huge reaction. I think you put it. I'll let you say it, Rob. Taking the words out of your mouth.
I've said several things about it, so one in particular.
But it was like the loudest reaction per head.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Pound, head for head that you've heard all year.
Yeah, I stand up for that as well. It wasn't just the noise; it was the excitement that people had when, because he just walked. He walked out there, and the crowd just exploded. And I'm included in that because I was really into Travis Banks. I've been into the whole storyline they've been telling with him in Fight for Pro all year long. He's been coming in looking great and losing.
And what I like about that story is that they told it through wrestling and not through any long-winded promo segments hammer on the head commentary. Like, they've just told it through his facial expressions, through the emotion.
Yeah. That's what he's best at. Like, the look of frustration that he's had after every defeat has been—it's palpable. You don't need him to get a microphone and go, "I'm sick and tired of losing," and you know, putting his career on the line or something ridiculous like that. It's just so pure. It's like you could see him getting frustrated that he was losing, but he kept coming back. He kept trying, and here he won. And I think the only complaint that you could have is that, like, he won his first match in what was a four-way, and two guys, Havoc and Brooks, are obviously heading towards a program with each other, and they'd already gone out. So it was, his victory was over Tyler Bates. But Tyler Bates is the only person who he'd pinned, because he had a 2 out of 3 falls match with Tyler Bates earlier in the year, and he won one of the falls. So it kind of made sense because, like, he's won again against Tyler Bate, but he hasn't really won. He's just gotten a fall, if you know what I mean. So it was building up to the main event. Like, he'd won, and it was great that he won. But then it's like the main event. It's like, all right, now
that's real test.
That's the real test. Like, you've shown that you belong here, but you haven't beaten anyone, not yet. But they told that story really well. I'm kind of looking forward to the Brooks and Havoc feud. That should be a good one.
Definitely. Like, Brooks is an excellent guy to feud with, because you get a lot of, like, creative freedom to tell a story in there. The biggest spot of this match, one that stands out in my mind, is Travis Banks doing the triple suicide dives to the outside and wiping out everyone in the room.
Including, like, a good few people in the front row. Because he kind of faked to do it one way and then dived out the other side, and
yeah, normally you like bounce off the ropes and then do the dive, but he just did the dive.
But some people scurrying, like when he did it to the other sides, but that one was the first one, and literally no one moved, no one could move because he was so fast, and all of a sudden they've got like Jimmy Havoc in their lap.
I think as much as we praise Laura Di Matteo's suicide dive, I have to say Travis Banks' is better.
Well,
he has the best in the biz.
I did say that I thought Travis Banks had the best tope. It's just so fast and it's so smooth.
Mm. He throws all of his body into it. Like, he's not like landing on his feet. He's just like diving out the ring.
Yeah, it's just about it's just so fast. So I know Haskins does a real, well, did a real good tope where he basically faked to go one way and then he'd go the other one. It's kind of like that, only it's just the speed that he gets for it is ridiculous. This should be impossible with the amount of run-up that he gets to get the speed that he gets to go through the ropes. But this is Travis Banks. He is a phenomenal athlete.
Mm-hmm.
I really think he's had an incredible year. When you consider at the start of the year, where was he at the start of the year?
First match in Britain was in December. So
just going to look him up, see where he was wrestling last year.
Looking at cage match earlier, if this drops on the 5th of December, this will be the anniversary of his first match in Britain, I believe.
Yeah, his cage match average is absolutely sickening. 6.67.
Wow. It's terrible.
How is that? Two people have voted him a 3.
Name and shame them.
I don't understand this. Like, how can you? It's in German, so I can't understand it.
Damn you, Germany!
Normally, they're pretty good at rating wrestlers, but. You disappointed me, Germany. Let me down.
But yeah, once he won this match, the warehouse exploded. Everyone was so behind this guy, and so like there was just genuine excitement for the rest of the show and for the main event. Like everyone was like, I was jumping up and down. I'm pretty sure everyone else was as well.
Everyone was jumping. everyone was jumping up and down. It's ridiculous. And the thing that got me is how much heat Tyler Bate was getting. Because he was wrestling against Travis Banks.
Trent Seven would get that later as well. Like, Banks is just ultimately popular. No one is above him.
Yeah, well, that's the storyline that they've been building up to. It's been a terrific story. And to see it kind of... I don't know if this is like the full payoff or whether it's a partial payoff and the other half is like when he gets a title shot, that's the payoff. But I can see them wanting to put the title on him having a long run. But we shall see. Have to wait for next year. I thought that was a really good match. That Travis, Tyler, Brooks and Havoc. Havoc didn't do an awful lot. But I'm still not certain he's 100% fit.
Yeah, I'm thinking that as well. Like, he seems to be taking it easy and not like taking any wacky bumps or anything, like he maybe used to do.
Of course, that might just be him trying to avoid another serious injury. If he's got to the stage where he's popular enough that he doesn't need to do stupid bumps, then
yeah, that's true as
good
well
for him.
He's working smart.
Yeah. The Infinity Tournament, I really like the idea because you get to see all the guys like straight away, and then you can kind of pick who you want. Whereas like you get like the same 8 guys and you did like a quarterfinal, semis, and a final kind of approach. I don't know if you get the same level of excitement.
No, I definitely like having all the qualifying matches at the start and then letting it simmer for a bit and then bringing it home at the end of a show. It's definitely a good structure to do it.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen it done that way anywhere else, but people tend to favour the tournament where there's a series of matches. And I think it works better this way. But then I guess if you're a promoter, you think you're getting less bang for your buck, as it were, because you're only getting two matches out of the guy that's winning the tournament instead of what could be three or four, even four, in other promotions. But yeah, they've hit upon a good formula, and I really enjoyed all the tournament stuff on this show. There were a couple of non-tournament matches kind of thrown in between the two qualifiers or semi-finals or whatever you want to call them, and the final at the end of the night. Dan Maloney, who has to be a contender for most improved in 2016, against the Australian Sean Custom. Maloney, I watched him wrestle because I watched that Tetsujin shoot style. I watched that this morning, and the difference between that Dan Maloney from a year ago and the one that is currently inhabiting space in wrestling rings around the UK is actually quite significant.
He's definitely a lot more content to throw his weight around the ring a bit more and like use his size. That was probably my biggest criticism of him before, was that he didn't work big, but now you can tell he's a big boy.
Yeah, he seems a lot happier in his environment. Like when wrestlers get comfortable in the ring, that's when they start to get really good.
Definitely.
So if you're not comfortable in that, a lot of criticisms that I fire at wrestlers are that they look like they're thinking about what they're doing, and that really, really hurts the match for me because you can tell that they're not like lost in the moment. They're thinking about the next spot, and you can see it on their face. They're thinking, I don't want to screw this up because I've got to do like a flip bump out of it, and then I've got to get back up into position for the next spot. And you can see all this on their face. Whereas, like when wrestlers get really good, you don't see any of that because they just know what's happening, and the facial expression is what it should be for somebody who's in that environment, rather than going through the thought processes.
And that comes with experience. He's only 19, so
Yeah.
he's got a lot to learn still, but he's already getting comfortable, and that's a very good thing.
Yeah, and I thought he carried this match as well.
Oh yeah, because Sean Costum was completely unknown and didn't really do anything to endear him to the crowd, so this was all on Maloney to get a reaction.
Yeah, I'm just looking Custom up because I really hadn't heard of him before he was announced. So, did he tour at all? Or I know he wrestled for Southside. Oh, and Attack. So he wrestled for
He's
Attack as
been
well.
in the UK for a few weeks or a few months now.
Yeah, obviously, if you go and wrestle in different places, you'll get better. That's just the way wrestling works. It's like you work with different people, you learn different styles. So he's kind of low on the learning curve at the moment, but he's a young guy. I'm sure he'll improve. Maybe he's thinking about moving to the UK because a lot of the Antipodeans seem to improve when they come over here.
What did you think of the little boots in this match?
The fans have been having a lot of fun with Dan Maloney, and the way that he's been reacting to it, I think it shows wisdom far beyond his years, because he's now in a position where he can milk like a chant for like 2 minutes. Then
Yeah,
like
basically.
his 10 minute match, if he didn't want to do 10 minutes of work and he wants to do 8 minutes of work, he can do that because he can just stand there and fans chant abuse at him.
He just looks so miserable when people mock his boots, and that just makes people want to mock his boots even more. He's lucked on something here. And the tiny little pair of boots that were thrown into the mat into the ring before the match. But it's probably the most memorable thing about the whole match. But his reaction was part of that, just standing over them
Oh,
for
yeah.
ages. I really hope the camera work on the VOD does it justice.
Well, the guy who was at ringside with the camera, I want to say his name's Paul. I think Paul O'Byrne. He was zooming in on the boots,
Yeah.
so you should have a long shot, and then you should get the ringside and then the zoom in.
Oh, I can't wait for the GIF.
Yeah, they were tiny. They're tiny little baby booties. that landed right at his feet as well. It couldn't have been more
it was an excellent throw.
Did you see him throw them out of the ring afterwards?
Oh yeah.
Somebody chucked them back in at the end of the match, and he picked them up and hurled them towards the bar, because I was at the bar and they went past my head. Yeah, good, great heel work from Dan Maloney. He's really growing on me, I must admit.
I drafted him, so
yeah, it's a good call. It's a very good.
In about 6 months' time, when we do the year on draft special, I can gloat over him.
Yeah, he's definitely a good pick. He was in my mind when we did the draft, but he's kind of rounded out a little bit since then. He's gotten a bit smoother in the ring. I think he's found the kind of strikes that suit him. His chops are really good, like really, really good. So yeah, he's progressed as a worker and as a character, and he's another one where I think he's going to have a big 2017. There is going to be spots opening up next year, and this is a guy who's more than capable of jumping into one of them.
I think just to touch on that point, after we've talked about this show and progress, like I want to say that the people who starred on these shows are the people who are going to be taking Brit Rest forward into 2017. Like, we said that there would be spots opening up now that a lot of the top talent has left or becoming part-timers only. These are the guys that we're talking about right now who are going to be replacing them, essentially.
The thing is, like, a year ago, we were asked that question, like, who do you think is going to be the next stars to come through? And it didn't seem particularly obvious, but over the course of 2016, so many guys have stood out.
Yeah.
It's been a great year. Like, in the previous 2 years, I think, have been really strong for British wrestling. But now I think we're seeing the real quality and depth that has come up as part of this revival.
This has definitely been the year of depth.
Yeah, not just for talent, but you look at the promotions and how good, like, Fight Club Pro and Attack have gotten this year, and OTT as well have gotten a lot better. And I think you're looking at the depth of the promotions as well, where there's just far more stuff to watch. Whereas, like, in the previous year, there was like the big three and the odd show that you might want to check out from Southside or something like that. And now,
yeah, definitely,
there's a lot more. The
second tier of promotions has stepped up. The second tier of wrestlers.
It's a good time to be a fan. it's a good time to start the podcast. we hit right on the start of this. So very exciting. So there's one more match before the Infinity Final, and that was a tag match that was supposed to be the Hunter Brothers against Kaylee Ray and Nixon Newell. But Jim, what's he doing? It's a knee injury of some kind. He's torn something. Is it MCL? I think he said
MCL, yeah.
Yeah, so he's torn it, which is bad news for him. But
that's like 6 months, I think.
Yeah, I'm afraid so. But in order to have the match still as the Hunter Brothers against Kaylee Ray and Nixon Newell, Lee Hunter was gifted a tag team partner because Jim went through a time machine to find a younger version of Lee, who has abs. And basically you had Drew Parker come out dressed as one of the Hunter Brothers, as like a junior member doing all the same spots and stuff, only with a little bit more youthful exuberance.
Mm. This is a very attacky match.
Yeah, yeah. Like I say, Fight Club Pro, the vast majority of their matches are very hard-hitting, but every now and again they put on a comedy match, and the comedy match is usually very, very funny. And this was one of those.
Yeah, well, it helps that all four of the people are well-versed in the comedy match and know how to do it. I also enjoyed that, even though this is an intergender match and I'm not the biggest fan of intergender, they didn't make it a thing Like, you watch Lucha Underground and you have Matt Stryker every 5 seconds saying, oh my god, it's a girl doing a woman in a man's world. It's like, shut up.
That's because Matt Stryker's a douchebag.
Yeah.
And Vampira is worse.
If you just, as Shia LaBeouf says, if you just do it, then it's fine. And, like, you just get on with it.
Yeah,
and make it a good match.
It was just a match. And
yeah.
I love, like, my favorite spot in the entire match was when, because Nixon Yule and Kaby Ray had the same shirt on, and they tried to do the twin magic spots.
Yeah, with like Nixon Yule, like her shirt was like over her head a bit, like, but she was still moving around like normal. That was impressive, to be honest. Limited vision, but still being able to fucking pull off her moves.
Yeah, that was good. I enjoyed this match. Drew Parker, I don't think I've seen him live before.
I'd never seen him live before either.
Very young.
Yeah, he's only 18.
Oh, God.
We're going to have wrestlers who were born in the 21st century soon enough.
Yeah, well...
Which is disgusting and should be banned.
There's somewhere out there, there is like a 15-year-old trainee who's working already. So, you know... Because Drew Parker started wrestling when he was like 15 years old, so
yeah,
that there's already somebody who's born in this century, which is quite worrying. I already feel old. Now it's your turn. But yeah, Drew Parker, he's really good. He's got a great gimmick in Attack where he basically took a bump on the head, and now he thinks he's ECW.
All of it.
All of it, yeah. What, one gimmick at a time.
Yeah. This match got sneaky good towards the end as well. Like, it was heavily comedy for most of it, but the last 5 minutes or so were just very strong action all the way through, and like some oftentimes scary bumps taken, including the finish where Kaylee Ray went head first onto Drew Parker's balls. And everyone thought everyone had died. But everyone got out okay.
It's very difficult to take a bump on the top of your head like that. That's
yeah. Oh, that's, and Nixon Newell broke her nose as well, I believe.
I didn't say that.
So everyone just had a rough old time in this match, despite it being a supposedly comedy match.
Well, you know, you got to get the old dirt strong style in there.
Yeah.
For Fight Club Pro. Yeah, so it was a pretty solid show up to this point. I was really enjoying it. Obviously, the Jack Daniels helped. But the atmosphere for the main event, absolutely sensational.
Yeah, off the charts.
It's been a long, long time since I experienced anything like that.
You know a match is good when everyone is creeping closer to the ring as it's going on.
I think the only time I've seen this kind of pure unbridled joy at somebody winning was when Mark Haskins won the Smash title from Johnny Gargano. And everyone just kind of erupted and was... You know, he was into the crowd, and you know that there was all the singing and everything. It was like that, only because it's such a like a smaller crowd and an intimate venue. It was just felt so much more intense.
Yeah, and Travis Banks can like create that intensity because he is such an intense guy. The crowd feeds off of that intensity.
Yeah, I mean, I think perhaps intentionally in progress, like his personality's been kind of held back a little bit.
Yeah, you only see it at the ends of his matches when he wins and he does that like death stare, showing that he's a badass. But I think they're slowly building him in progress. Like, they're gonna break him out of the power trip eventually, but they want him in there for now to boss the tag ranks and tell that story and get him and TK over at the same time. Whereas here in Fight Club, he's just the guy now.
Yeah, but he's got a terrific body of work in this company. Mm-hmm. You can pretty much buy into any Fight Club Pro show from this year, and you will see a really good Travis Banks match. It's pretty much doesn't matter which one it is, just any show they've done this year, he's probably on it, and the match is really good. And a couple of them have been outstanding. The one with Zack Sabre Jr., the one with Shane Strickland in Manchester, and this one with Trent Seven is a really, really strong match.
Yeah, him and Trent just had an excellent performance here. Trent did absolutely everything he could to get Travis Banks looking like a megastar. The crowd fed off of Banks. Banks rose to the occasion. The best spot of the match was when Seven threw Banks out of the ring, over to the door, and like even out of the door, which was amusing. But then Banks bursts back in. Seven throws a chair at him, and he just deflects it. Seven square in the face with his death stare. Seven keeps throwing the chair at him, and every time Banks throws it away, and every time Banks chucks it away, the crowd just keeps going more and more mental.
Yeah.
Like, it was absolutely frenzied after like the fourth time, when Seven just punches him in the face with the chair to end that sequence. But yeah, that was just so much hype in that bit.
It's just it's almost hard to explain what it was like being there, because everything had that kind of that intensity about it. Trent Seven, so good at getting other people over, because he knows from experience that you kind of have to show a little bit of fear to get someone over, but not too much. And I think he got the balance in this absolutely perfect. And then afterwards, when he put him over, with the promo, I think that was very heartfelt. Like he was saying, this is Travis Banks, he's really, really good, and this is why he's won.
No, I think Trent can be very proud of Travis, knowing that his best work has come in Fight Club Pro, and like Banks has given him his best work, his best stuff this year, and made Fight Club Pro that bit better, that bit more newsworthy. And I think they have come on leaps and bounds this year. Like you say, we weren't talking about them at all last year, and this year we can't stop talking about them. We're hijacking other segments just to talk about them.
Yeah, I think they've deserved every bit of that praise. And yeah, Travis, he's been great all year. No, that's all right. I was going to say, that's about all I've got left to say about it. It's just great.
Him versus Pete Dunne is going to be pretty intense and pretty exciting.
They are two of the most intense wrestlers in terms of the way that they carry themselves. In the British scene, that they're one and two, probably. Like Pete Dunne, the great thing about Pete Dunne is like it doesn't matter where he is, he carries himself like he hates everyone in that building, everyone. And you really get that feeling from him that he's like a proper old school heel where he doesn't let himself like be broken by, you know, distractions and things. He stays in that role, and he's so good at it. And it's sad that he wasn't on this card, because any Pete Dunne match at the moment is usually good times. It would have been nice for him to come out at the end and kind of hold the belt up and have a little moment.
Well, Infinity was Travis Banks' show.
It was.
And Chapter 39, which we're going to talk about now, was most certainly Pete Dunne's show. So it's funny the way that works, that those two are going to have a big match to start off next year, and they both got their big star-making moments this weekend. And it was great to be live there to see them both. So yeah, Chapter 39.
Before we move on, I have to say thank you to Alan Boone for driving us both back from the show, because it finished so late that... But it finished about 45 minutes after the last train back into Birmingham. So like, there was no way either of us were getting home if it wasn't for Alan driving. So a big thank you to Alan Boone. You can follow him on Twitter. I'll say at Indie Sleaze, but it's
Indie Sleaze.
It's Indie, like if it was Indiana Jones. if you're abbreviating Indiana Jones to Indy, that's how you spell it with a Y.
Go follow that man. He is a legend. He and is, may drive great. You places.
And hopefully he doesn't become a taxi service for people. But yeah, he's good people.
Excellent. Chapter 39, Progress. Much like Infinity, this was a one-night tournament show where people would qualify to enter an elimination match for the Progress Championship at the end of the night. Mark Haskins vacating the belt last chapter. He won't be around for a while, which is very disappointing, but it gave them this incredible opportunity to have a very unique show and a very exciting show at that as well. Going in, we didn't really have any clue who was going to win the championship. My top pick was Will Ospreay, and he didn't even make it to the final. So,
yeah, I think we had a lot of guesses, and we basically got it wrong. But yeah. The reason why I didn't even think about Pete Dunne is because I had this seed in the back of my head where, you know, he'd left, like he's lost a Loser Leaves Town match in Attack, and that kind of made me think, well, has he signed somewhere? Is he getting bookings like for somewhere else? Is he gonna, like, because he's going somewhere else, he's gonna have to like tone down the UK dates, or is he leaving altogether? Like, I didn't really know what was going on, so I'd kind of dismissed him because of that. Like, I wasn't even sure if they were going to retain the titles against the London Riots. So yeah, it caught me by surprise, but in a good way.
The execution of his title win was stellar, and we'll get to that when we get to that match. But that was certainly the theme of the night, and the night ended on, for us, a great note, but for Progress in general, like a very good story beat that makes their forward progress, no pun intended, much clearer now. Like, you can see where they're going heading into 2017, which you really couldn't, especially after Haskins had to vacate the belt.
Yeah, it was a difficult spot for them to be put in.
They made the most of it, though. We'll get to the matches now, and the hero of Infinity, Travis Banks, teaming with TK Cooper versus FSU, Eddie Dennis and Mark Andrews. What did we think of this match to start the show?
I kind of got the prediction wrong, but then I didn't know it was announced as like a number one contenders match, because like the Power Trip are the number one contenders, but that was on the line here, which I didn't know. If I'd have known that was the case, I wouldn't have.
They've been the number one contenders for like 3 months now, but they keep having to like defend it for no good reason. They've been very vague about the whole number one contendership thing.
I don't know why they have to defend it if they've won that. Because they sent a tweet out saying like it had been overlooked that they were now the number one contenders. And I was thinking, but they're already the number one contenders.
They were the number one contenders after the Triple Threat tag team match back in Manchester. Then I think they defended it versus the Shirtlifters in the tables match. And now they're having to defend it again. It's like, when do they get their shot?
I don't know, it seems a bit extreme that they've had to defend it three times.
A little odd, but well, they've been established as the tag team to beat, I guess. So it's odd that it's going to be two heel tag teams going up against each other in British Strong Style and SPPT, but there we go.
I can see it leading to a split based on like whoever loses that, I think, is splitting up.
Yeah.
Whether that's the Power Trip themselves, or whether it's the current tag champs, because like, how long can Pete Dunne be both? So I don't know. I really don't know which way it's going to go, but I kind of get the feeling that whoever loses is splitting up.
I think the biggest talking point from this match was Travis Banks' ear bleeding profusely throughout. That's certainly the most memorable thing, I think.
Yeah, apparently he got that torn up by I think it's Paul London when he was working for Southside in between those two shows. So like, he had another match
and Saturday,
that's the one that got injured. Because we were stood watching this show with Bo's Johnny. That's another follow for you on Twitter. He was stood with us, and he asked, did he pick up that ear injury on Friday at Fight Club Pro? And I was like, I don't think so. But then it is Fight Club Pro. They were kind of wailing on each other. But no, apparently he picked it up on the Saturday in yet another match.
I don't have any particularly strong opinions about this match. It was over fairly quickly. But I just thought everything Travis Banks especially did, just it felt a lot more weighty, especially after Infinity. He's a main man in my eyes. Like, I'm never going to look at him and think, yeah, that was just a meh performance from him. Like, I'm fully invested in him.
Yeah, in a way, it feels like he's almost wasted in tag teams.
Yeah. And TK Cooper's good, but Travis Banks is just on another level right now. So I think when you're saying that a split may be coming, you may well be right when it comes to the power trip.
Yeah, but then I can also see them winning the titles and having like a fairly decent run with them, and then splitting up because of the differences within their little faction. Because there's definitely been issues there with Dahlia Black, where you're not quite sure who's supposed to be taking what side and how it's going to fall apart,
yeah.
Which it inevitably will do, because that's,
that's wrestling.
That's
Should we move on to Pastor Emiva defeating Joe Coffey by kind of cheating?
By Sebastian.
By Sebastian, and also pulling the tights and rolling him up. And then Jim Smallman saying, oh, shit, applaud Pastor because he deserved the win and deserves to be in the final. And then everyone's going, no, he cheated. I don't know if he was meant to be pulling the tights or not, but yeah, this match was all about Sebastian and therefore was terrible.
Yeah, I didn't like this at all. But the angle is kind of overwhelming the action. I've seen a lot of people defending it on Twitter, saying that Sebastian's getting the reactions. And I even said that to you at the time. I was like, I'm really going to stop booing him now.
Yeah, because I almost told you to stop booing him.
Yeah, it's like he's getting heat, and I kind of
because if he gets the reactions, we're gonna have to fucking put up with him for another year.
Yeah,
he's getting chance. He's getting mild reactions, I would say, but it's not like he's fucking Jimmy Havoc versus Will Ospreay.
No, I don't mind him getting the reactions. Just. It'd be okay if he was like a little undercard heel act, and that'd be fine. But having him in the main event on this show was just spent the whole of the main event waiting for him to get eliminated so that we could enjoy it.
That is the big worry with Sebastian, is that putting him in such high profile positions for what is essentially an undercard match, and I'm worried that they're doing that to try and like force either into the main event when he's proven to be not ready for it yet. It's a little bit worrying, and I didn't think he got a huge reaction or anything. He just got some chance, and everyone gets chance, as we'll hear more about in some matches later on. You can get chance for literally doing nothing, just wearing clothes in progress. So I don't think Sebastian getting chance is proof that, oh, he's a great heel or anything. And the fact that he essentially ruined the first couple of minutes of the main event just by being there and us worrying that he was going to be like the
like
main
the
story of the main
something.
Event.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, we don't want that. In that kind of match, you just want great action and not for it to be bogged down.
I'd have been fine with him getting knocked straight out right at the start and eliminated.
Yeah.
I thought that would have been a good callback to Brixton as well, but oh well. Yeah, it's what worries me the most is that. It's kind of damaging Eva's run, because he's very good, and having a match with Joe Coffey that's not very good is a worry.
Yeah, they didn't really get a chance to be good here because of the story permeating through, but which is unfortunate.
Was that permeating?
Permeating, yeah. I can speak English.
Excellent. Yeah, I didn't really enjoy that much, but considering the strength of the rest of the show, it was like, it was a blip. I think
it's
a blip.
yeah, they got over the blip quite easily.
Immediately.
With the next match, which was British Strong Style defeating the London Riots in what a match I thought was a lot better than their Brixton match. I thought this was pushing 4 stars. I thought by the end, both teams were getting very big reactions from us. We were all about British Strong Style, repping the West Midlands. But like everyone was solidly behind the Riots here, really reacting to British Strong Style. And I think this reaction, this proper like visceral reaction, rather than just chanting for Sebastian, I thought it was like a genuine emotional reaction to British Strong Style.
People are invested in these people. They
and
really care
I think,
about them.
I think that reaction, like that more genuine reaction, validates Progress's decision to now make them the top heel faction.
Yeah, I thought the best part of this match was there was always the underlying story where Rob Lynch had come back too soon.
Yeah.
So he'd still got that facial injury and he got like the Phantom of the Opera mask on. And that's how they won the match, British Strong Style, because they went after the injury, they pulled the mask off, they smashed him in the face, and then they hit him with the pile driver. And that, for me, that's great storytelling. You take the weakness and you exploit it. That's what great heels do.
Makes the Riots not look weak, but at the same time, not on the sneaky levels of British Strong Style.
It makes them look brave for going in there with the injury.
Definitely.
And just because they got beat, that doesn't make them look any weaker. So that's good stuff.
The feud continues. Trent Seven's getting great reactions in Progress, as is Pete Dunne. I'm fully on board with both of them, and they're going to be strong Britty candidates across the board.
It's hard to say, because I kind of had Pete Dunne down as most improved for this year, but like, I mean, he was really good at the end of last year, but it's just he's really, really good now.
He's top tier.
Yeah, no doubt. I think they've definitely made the right decision, Progress, in going with Dunne. I would have loved for it to be Seven.
But do you think they see Seven as an enhancement guy who can like make the other top stars look great?
I think there's a longer game at play with Trent. Because with Trent Seven, I don't think you're going to see him leave completely at any point until he's too old to do this. So,
I think the fact that like he's so rooted in Wolverhampton and Fight Club Pro, and also his age isn't exactly attractive to potential suitors.
I can see him getting a run in Japan somewhere, because he's so ideally suited to that style. But
and also like Japanese wrestlers are a little bit older anyway. Like they start older, they get given the big runs when they're in their 30s. So that would fit for him.
So I can see him hanging around for a lot longer in British wrestling than Pete Dunne, who I think is destined to end up somewhere.
Yeah.
So Trent, I think you're looking at the long game with him, and that would be a babyface title win, and that would be down the line.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that.
I think you need to build to it.
Dunne, probably by the end of 2018. Won't be in Britress anymore, whereas Trent Seven absolutely will be, and he'll be a cornerstone to build around.
Yeah, he can get storylines over. I think he's a great promo. I think that there will be long-term plans for him, certainly. Whereas Pete Dunne, I don't think you can make those plans because of how well he's doing. There's always that worry that he's going to get picked up. Which is why I was kind of surprised that he won the title, but at the same time, kind of not, because he's hot. This is the time to do it.
And then we had the best match on the show. Matt Riddle defeating Will Ospreay in an absolutely bonkers match.
Yeah, this is crazy. Riddle, he just walked out there and... I mean, I've never seen him live before, and... He just walked to the ring and he exudes star power. Like, he was head and shoulders above everyone else on this show in terms of like what his ceiling is in wrestling. as in he's going to be WWE champion at some point.
Yeah.
Because he looks unbelievable. He carries himself like a world champion. And he stood out so incredibly. The crowd just connected with him immediately as soon as he walked through that curtain. And I know a lot of them are familiar with his work already, but I think even if you're only like vaguely familiar with his work before this match, he's won you over here. I think it was Dan the Dazzler who was completely sold on him based on this match, and I can see that.
I wasn't too familiar with him. I've only ever seen a couple of Riddle matches ever. Yeah, he has star power coming out the wazoo. He's just such an endearing guy. Like the fact that he's just got a smile all the time, whatever he's doing, unless he's trying to rip someone's head off. Even then, he's still kind of happy about it. Like, he's so endearing. He's going to be a mega babyface one day. And the start of this match was instant impact for him, because in the next match they did the Goldberg spot, but this match did the Goldberg spot better than the actual Goldberg spot, because Riddle came straight out of the blocks, crushed Ospreay for like 2 minutes, and really had him in peril, and I thought they might well be doing the Goldberg thing and having him win in 2 minutes or so, with Ospreay getting in no offense, because Riddle's offense looked that badass and that painful.
Yeah, it just took him apart. It ended up being a really good competitive match. I'd like to watch it back again before I start throwing snowflakes around, but like it was what, 10 minutes long? But
it was a sprint.
Yeah, it was really well structured. The pacing was perfect. And both guys came out of it looking better than they went in. Matt Riddle, man, I just...
Ospreay's had kind of a quiet second half of the year, but this match definitely proved that he still absolutely has it and can turn it on and produce a +4-star match basically any time he wants to.
I'm really glad he's had a second half of the year that's been a bit quieter than the first, because he needs to kind of rest and recoup like some of that energy that he's burned through in the first half. He's had a lot of matches this year.
Mm-hmm. He showed up for this match totally. Both guys were completely on their A game, trying to show off. There was really only one awkward moment of the match where Ospreay went for the reverse Rana, the indie special, and Matt Riddle just didn't realize, or he realized too late, and it just looked... But even then, like, his charisma still pulled it off, because he still did a crazy flip for it, and he transitioned it straight into, like...
It's a little bit delayed, wasn't it?
Suplex. So they covered for it well.
You could argue that because of how quickly Ospreay did it, that he was bumping as part of the reverse Rana. It was just kind of late, so it looked weird. But
reverse Rana faster than the speed of light.
yeah, because it was that fast. Yeah, I just blow away performance here from Riddle. I actually think he's a contender for best import, best. Based just on this.
Just on this one show. Yeah. Well, considering what happened after this show and the fucking getting carried into the World's End, which we missed by like a minute. And the entire crowd chanting for him outside of the Electric Ballroom.
Yeah.
This guy is over.
He got banned from the World's End.
Yes. They didn't realize that he was, future WWE champion.
They kicked him out.
They were singing the Spandau Ballet,
only with Bro replacing. The guys were singing. I'm pretty sure it's King Kier started the chant off, but they were singing this like all the way through the main event, like all the second half of this match. I think it started, but like it was just constant. And outside, they were singing it. And then they were singing "You're Indestructible" when they were taking him into the pub, and the bouncer, when he was kicking him out, said, "You're not so indestructible now," which is
oh dear,
yeah, wrestling. I fucking love it.
Yeah, Matt Riddle for import of the year may well be a strong shout.
Yeah, he's a contender.
He delivered in his match. He delivered with his performance. He delivered with just interacting with the crowd.
Instant connection. Yeah.
I think maybe only Shibata walking over the rows of chairs after Summer Sizzler was maybe a cooler moment.
Okay, so we've gushed over that enough, I think. Well, yeah. Move on
and
to...
And then Jimmy Havoc beat Marty Scurll via Eddie Guerrero special.
Yeah, but like...
Hammering the umbrella.
I don't
this
remember...
This match was totally just there for me.
I don't remember Eddie Guerrero ever hitting himself in the head with a chair. And then... Sorry, it wasn't a chair, it was an umbrella, but, you know, get the... Like, grabbing the international object, hitting himself in the head, and then throwing it to the opponent. He kind of, you know, hit the mat or something.
Yeah.
Well, it just made me laugh that Havoc hit himself.
This match probably would have been best placed after intermission rather than before.
I think they had to give all the guys a chance to plan out the final. I think that's basically why it was in.
But at the same time, this one was totally overshadowed by Riddle Ospreay. And
yeah, I'd have put them the other way around.
Yeah, but I think they wanted this one to feel big because it's like a rivalry blow off, and it just kind of didn't. It felt a little too cutesy and less like a blood feud.
Yeah, I kind of enjoyed it. It was different to everything else on the first half. They did a lot of like brawling around on the outside, and they, of course, the very start of the match, Jimmy Havoc did literally the start of the Survivor Series main event. Hit two spears and then went for hit the Rainmaker, and then Skull kicked out. I think if they'd have done that just to blow that feud off, there would have been nothing wrong with that.
I would have hated it because it would have felt so derivative of WWE. And I think if your progress, I know they have the deal with WWE and they're like part of a family and that, but you're punk rock pro wrestling. You don't want to have your biggest angle end with a comedy parody of the WWE angle.
I don't think the angle's played out all that well, though. I think this has been a slight underperformer. I don't really feel like Havoc is that good of a babyface.
The jury is still out. I thought in the main event, we'll talk about that in a bit, but he didn't come across like top babyface material. I think if that's the direction they're going in, and they can't really go in any other direction because they don't have anyone else to serve as the top babyface, but Havoc as a heel is a lot better than Havoc as a babyface, I think.
Yeah. I think that's the case for a lot of guys, though. I mean, you could argue just about everyone is better as a heel, apart from Trent Seven. I think it's a great babyface.
So this one didn't really land on me. I'll watch it again and see if it's any better out of the moment, but I was so exhausted after Riddle Ospreay that this one just felt pretty meh in comparison.
I was pretty fired up at the time, so I kind of enjoyed it, but I'd like to watch it a second time just to...
I hated the Goldberg thing, mainly because Riddle Ospreay had already done the Goldberg thing, but just not...
No spears.
It wasn't hammering you on the head with it. Like, it was subtle. This one was just, remember the thing that happened. Sorry for being cynical, but yeah.
That's what you're here for. Because there's no Rob. So Rob would be cynical, so you have to do Rob's cynic stuff.
After break, we had the Natural Progression Series 4 match, Katie Harvey versus Nixon Newell.
Did anyone actually think Katie Harvey was going to win? Because I said beforehand, the one thing I'm certain of about this show is that Nixon Newell is going to win.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty much in the bag. But Arn, did you see that Katie Harvey had a sleeve?
Yeah, I did see that.
Yeah.
She only had one sleeve.
There
was a lot of really cheap stuff with the just yelling sleeve, but
that joke died pretty much the instant it was said.
I did get quite a rise out of the "you're just a shit Winter Soldier" chant. that is peak fan chanting. That is
sleeve less so. Let's hope sleeve never comes back. Hopefully she just comes back wearing, you know,
yeah, with like
no sleeves.
Two sleeves or no sleeves.
Or two sleeves. Or even more than that. But let's stop talking about sleeves. Let's talk about the match, because that's what we were here for.
Well, I think she tweeted something afterwards, Katie Harvey, about she didn't realise the Progress fans were just fashion critics, which about sums up how they...
I wasn't too blown away with Katie Harvey here. Some people enjoyed her performance. I was just like...
Yeah, I think she's fine. I've seen her have a couple of matches that were probably a little bit better than this, but she was basically brought in to just lose in the first round, so...
Yeah. And Nixon Newell, yeah.
Nixon,
fun
Nixon
as always.
Good. Yeah.
I don't have too much to say about this match. It was just kind of a... I wouldn't be crying if Katie Harvey never came back.
It is nice that there is like a little under layer of women's talent coming through.
Yeah, no one drafted her in our Euro draft.
She was on my shortlist.
Okay.
But I went with Lana Austin instead because I saw her like rip off a Hirooki Goto spot and nail it. And I was like, yeah, I'll have her instead. But she was on
Hirooki Goto spots here.
Nah, she was on the shortlist though. So I'd seen her a few times, thought she was pretty good. But there is a nice little level of talent starting to come through with the women. I think it's going to get better because I think the all the women that have wrestled for Progress have gotten better since they first got there.
Definitely.
With the possible exception of Nixon Newell, because she was really good when she started. So it's good to see that year, that improvement. I certainly think Ginny's a contender for most improved.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
When we get into the British, I should make a note of that.
And as you make a note, I'll move on to the main event, where Pete Dunne won the Progress Championship, defeating Matt Riddle, Jimmy Havoc, Sebastian, TK Cooper, Travis Banks, and Trent Seven. Any immediate thoughts that leapt out to you in this one? Sebastian,
yeah, we've already
ruining
talked
the
about
first couple of minutes.
It's like once he was gone, I got really into the match. Until he was actually out, I was worried that there was some sort of angle coming that I didn't want to live with. So, yeah, it was kind of cool. We had Matt Riddle put TK Cooper out first, and then Havoc put Sebastian out, and I could kind of... you know, if it settled down a bit after that, because everyone else that was left was really good.
I was really happy that the match focused on the great wrestlers in it and not Sebastian and his story. Like, they could have very easily just done a cutesy Havoc beating Sebastian after Sebastian lucked into the final two or whatever, and that would have been pretty shitty.
Kind of thought that's what was going to happen, but...
Same.
I was very into the Travis Banks, Matt Riddle... shoot. So at the start of the match, Riddle basically demolished everyone with his skill, and it came down to the last two to square off was Riddle and Travis Banks, and Travis hung with him for like about a minute of mat counters, and it was all so good. Like, so good.
It's two legitimate fighters, so...
So I get the feeling they kind of had, when they were planning the match beforehand, I think Riddle's gone, this is what I want to do. Does anyone want to do that?
I want to have fucking 1 minute exhibition with you.
Everyone else
take a nap.
He wants to come and test me, and Travis Banks is like, right here.
that was very enjoyable.
He showed
everyone
the level he's operating at, though.
Everyone did big dives to the outside. TK Cooper got in his massive spot of just a massive twirling, diving, crashing disaster.
Just kind of a moonsault with a twist.
Yeah, it looked amazing, and then he was out of there. So TK Cooper absolutely did everything that he could to look great in this match and didn't have to hang around too long. And then they moved, when Seb got out of there, and then they moved on to a really strong final five. None of these seven guys were actively in Progress this time last year. So it's impressive that they managed to restock the roster as well as they have, ignoring Sebastian, obviously, but he wasn't there either. But the other six, very strong wrestlers, and the fact that they're being featured so prominently after not being in progress for that long just proves how good they are.
Yeah, there's a good end to the show. I mean, I think if you're a fan of like baby faces winning big events, then you could possibly question the booking here, because you're looking at like a lot of big heel wins, because you had two tag teams make it into the final seven and they're all heels, so you had like straight away you got four. Then you've got Skrull as well, so you've only got two baby faces, five heels.
Yeah. The first portion of the match didn't even have Jimmy Havoc, because Skrull came out and whacked him over the head with an umbrella and took him out for a few minutes. So very early on, it was just Matt Riddle versus five heels. And for a lot of the match, it was, you know, Travis Banks squaring off against the British Strong Style guys. But as we've said before, those guys are great wrestlers, and I think the crowd took to them anyway.
Yeah, the quality of the match was very strong, and I think that helped.
Yeah. And I'm so, so glad that they forewent the story. You know, they could have not ruined the match, but hurt it or made it more of a story match. And instead, they focused on the wrestlers just wrestling, and I like that.
Yeah, I'm pleased that it ended up the way it did, because this feels like a new chapter. Progress is always looking forwards. It's one of their strongest traits as a promotion, is that they don't really have a nostalgic look back at all. They're always like, let's keep going forwards, let's do something new. And that was like when Mustache Mountain came in, they broke them up immediately. It was like, what? But that's what they do. They're a very forward-thinking company. They like to try new things, and Pete Dunne as champion is a step in a new direction, whereas if you put the belt on Jimmy Havoc again, it's like, well, where do you go from there?
Yeah. Speaking of Mustache Mountain breaking up a few months ago, they're back, because the end of this match saw Tyler Bate joining British Strong Style, hitting Jimmy Havoc, and suddenly West Midlands dominance in progress.
I was very happy about this. I almost tweeted Jim Smallman saying, like, putting the Midlands lads over again. Thanks for that. Was that for me? So I had gushed to him about how much I liked the Midlands wrestlers and how pleased I was that they were getting pushed in progress. And here we are again. Although they are all being booked as heels now that Haskins is injured.
Yeah, and so going forward, it seems to be Jimmy Havoc versus British Strong Style. Jimmy Havoc and whoever he can conjure up. Maybe Damian Dunn will get in on the scene.
Well, I think Lyndon Wright's is kind of likely, because they were like affiliated before when Havoc was a heel. So I can see that happening. And I'd have no problem with that. That'd be a good six-man tag.
It was great to see Travis Banks hang for so long in this match and be on the same level as these main eventers. Great to see Trent Seven just command the scene so well, and of course the ascension of Pete Dunne to the top. He's the guy now for Progress. Yeah. Maybe not their top star. I think they still see Jimmy Havoc as their top star, and when they're around Sabre Jr. and Ospreay, but Pete Dunne is on that level.
Well, you know, you got the belt, you're the man.
Yeah.
I'm rather surprised that he's got to this spot before Zach Gibson. That's possibly the only thing that is weird about the whole situation, is that he's the champion and Zach Gibson isn't, because Zach was getting so much heat that to have sneaking before him is kind of a surprise.
This is why The Origin weren't on this show at all, because they wanted to establish British Strong Style as the top heel faction. And the absolute scenes that went down at the end of the show, like the security guards like trying to get in the way of British Strong Style because they were jawing with all the fans, and it felt like people were throwing shit into the ring. It felt like a genuine big moment. We were just going crazy and applauding them and happy for them. The only people happy for them in the entire room.
It was me, you, and Bo's Johnny. Which was kind of handy, because we're all stood together. We've been stood in like three separate parts of the arena. Could have been trouble.
Just the three of us. And It felt like a genuine, raw, emotional reaction to British Strong Style. They've gotten these guys over, they've gotten themselves over, whatever you want to say. These guys are going to be the stars of progress in 2017.
Yeah, no doubt. I had such a good weekend. Like watching those two shows, I lost my voice completely on the Monday. It was gone. Like, I couldn't talk. that's the kind of weekend.
That's when you know the wrestling has been good, when you've lost the ability to talk afterwards.
Yeah, it was whiskey and shouting. It's a fantastic combination. That's basically how I live my life. Whiskey and shouting. One whiskey and one shout at a time.
So, any final thoughts on this weekend?
A couple of progress notes and on-demand stuff. Fight Club Pro's Infinity won't be on Vimeo for another 2 weeks, apparently, so it'll be mid-December. In the meantime, they have a number of really top-quality shows from this year that you can check out. The first one I watched was Rage Against the Death Machine, which is Travis Banks and Zack Sabre Jr. in the opening match.
I feel like that show really kicked their 2016 off. Yeah. I know it was halfway through the year, but it was, was it their first show at Fiction or like their second show at Fiction?
I think it's the first one, but it certainly felt like a reset for them.
Yeah.
Because before that they had MK McKinnon as the champion, and that's when he gave the belt up. And then you had Sami Callihan and Trent Seven main event that show.
Yeah. So if you want to start, like, if you don't know where to start, that's probably where to start watching Fight Club Pro from. You know, it's pretty recent, only a few months ago, but that's when
July,
all the stories heading to Infinity really started.
And also, another on-demand note, Progress has got a new arrangement with WXW, and they've got 6 shows on Progress On Demand at the moment from WXW from this year. I have WXW now as well, so this is kind of like I've already seen these shows, but it's Shortcut to the Top, all 3 nights of the Tag League, which I thought that was a really good series of shows, and Broken Rules. So they're going to be on Progress On Demand until the end of the year, so you've got like another 4 weeks to sit and watch those, see if you want to watch more WXW, which you probably should, but it's an opportunity to see that stuff.
Their relationship's going to be interesting to watch in 2017 because they've got a couple of crossover shows.
Yeah. It's the first one in Camden next year in January. Yeah. The night before, they're running a WXW show at the Dome, I think it is. It was the Garage, but it's now the Dome. I have to find out what that is because I've got tickets to it. And also, Progress have got their documentary, which they screened after the Graps of Wrath. That was on quite late, so we didn't see that one, but they have their documentary that was filmed. That's on Progress On Demand as well. And finally, we have the next Progress show is Intercepted Angel, which is because the venue double booked with Ash, so they named it after an Ash song. That's got Pete Dunne's first title defense against Zack Sabre Jr., FSU against El Ligero and Nathan Cruz, Adam Cole against Will Ospreay, Tony Storm against Bea Priestley. That's in the Progression Series 4, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a first round match, so that'd be fun. We probably won't do any kind of preview for that, but we'll more than likely review it instead. Do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I think the next episode will be the Britties. So we're going to be coming up with categories for that, awards for the year of European wrestling in 2016, and posting those to the Voices of Wrestling forums probably in the next week or so, and then deciding winners. We'll keep you updated via Twitter and on the forums, based on what's going on there. But yeah, keep checking back on the Voices of Wrestling forums and we will have categories and you can fill in your ballots. I don't think the winners will be determined by you, but it will certainly be interesting to hear your opinions about
who's done what this year.
Yeah, yeah.
Could be swayed.
So sway us, persuade us.
After that, we've got WXW's 16th anniversary show is the same weekend as Progress Chapter 40. And just before Christmas, OTT have their invasion show in Belfast. So we're not short on things to talk about. Normally December is kind of a bit of a wasteland and like we don't do anything, but there's loads of stuff going on. So, yeah. I think that's about it.
That is about it. So do you want to do plugs or should we get out of here?
I need
to eat dinner.
Yeah. Let's eat.
I'm a hungry man.
Okay. Until next time, good evening.